Now, we're holding on page 16 in Yuma, about four or five lines from the top, middle of Vayis Teslov. We're in the middle of talking about the Nisim that happened in the Beis Hamikdash. We mentioned that the Jewish people were standing there very crowded in the Azara. We said Tzfufim, as in literally you have people floating off the ground, not able to touch the ground because it was so crowded. But then in Meshtachvim, when it came time to bow, then they're bowing with plenty of space. So we started listing the 10 Nisim that it says in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. So we mentioned a few so far. Women never miscarried from the smell of the meat of the Kodshim. The meat never spoiled. There were never any flies in the Beis HaMikdash. The Kohen Gadol never became a Baal Keri on Yom Kippur. The Omer, the Shtei Alechem, and the Lechem Aponim never became posel. The next one is Omrim Tzfufim Meshtachvim Revachim. The next one, we said before, they would stand very crowded. And again, Tzfufim, Rashi said, comes from the word Tzuf, which means floating, because you have people literally whose feet are floating off the ground, or Meshtachvim Revachim. But we said when they come to bow, then they have plenty of space, not only because each person needs space to bow, because you also need space around each person, so that what he's saying, his personal vidui, that other people don't overhear him. The next one, snakes and scorpions never harmed anybody in Yerushalayim. So it's not that they weren't present. Snakes and scorpions you can find all over the place, but they never harmed anybody or killed anybody in Yerushalayim. So Marsha points out, now, other kinds, there's many other causes of death, and the person you most people die because one or another of Avera of theirs. We have in Bava Basra only the rare few people in history who had no chet at all and died only because of the chet etzadas. But for a person to be for a person to be killed by a snake represents, in fact, that he has that there's no other reason for him to die but the chet etzadas. So therefore, they were protected against that in Yerushalayim. There are sichas where the Rebbe talks about a deeper idea in this as well, that a nachash is a symbol of lashon hara, as the original nachash HaKadmoni was. An akrav, where we know you have the difference between a snake's venom is hot and a scorpion's venom is cold, so it represents the kind of the kind of sinas chinam or indifference that one person might have to another. So you didn't have that in Yerushalayim. Obviously, eventually they did have sinas chinam. We said before that was why the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, but we're talking on the whole, there wasn't. And the last one was nobody ever said to somebody else, it's too crowded for me to stay in Yerushalayim, even though everybody had to stay there. So Rashi explains it doesn't just mean staying there for the Yom Tovim, it also meant a person is going to say, I can't make a living over here. I have two quits, too crowded. I don't have a good enough space to live in. Nobody ever felt that way. Everybody always realized that it's a privilege to live in Yerushalayim and that whatever happens as far as Parnassah happens, and nobody ever complained that they're having a hard time of it. Which one point is also it represents the sense of bittul that they had, that I don't need more than what the Eibishter has given me. This Omrim Tzfufim Meshtachvim Revachim that I've pointed out in one of those sichos also reflects that idea, because they're willing to be Omrim Tzfufim, because they're willing to give up their because they're willing to give up their own metzios and be crowded like that in the Beis Hamikdash. Therefore, they have that when it comes to Meshtachvim, when they're bowing to Hashem, they're able to have more of that sense of bittul, and therefore they have Revachim. Okay. So the Gemara says, Posach b'mikdash v'siyim b'Yerushalayim. Now, on the face of it, the Mishnah starts talking about 10 Nisim that happened in the Beis Hamikdash, but then a number of the ones we said were in Yerushalayim. The last few we said about the Nachash v'Akrav, and nobody ever said it's too difficult for me to live in Yerushalayim. So that's in Yerushalayim. So what are those doing in the Mishnah? The Gemara answers, Ikka tauti achra naisa b'mikdash. Because in fact, there are two others that took place in the Beis Hamikdash, which were not listed so far. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Me'olam like kibug shomim eish shal atzeh ma'arocha. The fire never put out the wood, never put out the rain, never put out the fire that was burning with the wood piles on the Mizbeach. And even though it was open to the air, there was the whole Azara in general we talk about was open to the air, but I think there are opinions that said that it was mostly roofed over. But even if it was, the area of the Mizbeach was definitely unroofed, and the rain never affected the fire. Vashana Marocha, and the second one is as far as the smoke from the Marocha, even if all the winds in the world come and blow on it, they wouldn't move it, they wouldn't cause the smoke to dissipate. So that those were two more nissim. Now, when we look in Pirkei Avos, we actually find those two are listed in the Mishnah. Here, when the Gemara quoted the Mishnah, it didn't have those, and it brought them from a Braisa. So Rashi on Pirkei Avos says, in fact, evidently those two don't belong in the text of the Mishnah, because we see from our Gemara over here that the Gemara had to supply them from a Braisa. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Hananel says, once the Gemara goes through the whole discussion, the Gemara is going to continue with other nisim that happen in the Bais Hamikdash, which are not listed for one reason or another. Once the Gemara concludes with that whole thing, then we see that, in fact, we're meant to count of the ones we said before about that there was never a psul in the Omer and the Shtei Lechem and the Lechem Aponim. Those are all, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, those all count as one nest, and therefore we have room for two more, and therefore, so like they rewrote the Mishnah to include these two that are in the Braisa over here, and thus we have the Mishnah as we have it in Pirkei Avos. Anyway, the Gemara asks Vetuleka, you're telling me there were no other nisim other than these 10 in the Bais Hamikdash? Hatoni Reb Shmaya Miklanvoy. Reb Shmaya from Klanvoy is the name of a place in Bavel. The Gemara mentions it in a different context, actually. It says that one time, one of the Chachamim stayed there overnight, and the next day when they asked him where he stayed, he says, this place, Klanvoy, and they ask him, isn't that named after the idol Nevoy, how you're allowed to say the name? And he explains the famous halacha that any idol whose name is mentioned in Tanakh, you're allowed to say the name of it. Since Nevoy is mentioned in Yeshaya and in other places in Tanakh, therefore you're allowed to say it. You have Sichas, where it ever talks about the deeper idea behind that being, once it's mentioned in Torah, then it means the whole concept of it as Avodah Zarah is bottle, and it becomes like you have it to a certain extent, it gets included in Kedusha. Anyway, the point is, this Reb Shmaya was from there. So he says, Shivrei klei cheres nivloin b'mekoyim, broken pieces of earthenware were swallowed up in their place on the floor. Now, what happens is like this. The Torah tells us in Parshas Tzav that uchli cheres asher tevushal boi, asher tevushal boi yishover. The pasuk says that if you cook a chatas in a kli cheres, the kli cheres absorbs. Eventually, those molecules of the food that it absorbed eventually becomes noiser. And since you can't kasher klei cheres, so therefore you have to break them. And you have a specific din that the pasuk says over there, they have to be broken. And we learn the Gemara in Zvachim has a whole discussion about it, that we learn from Sukkim that it actually has to be broken in the Azara. Now, if you didn't end out, now, they didn't necessarily clear them out of the Azara. Now, Tosfos Yeshanim wonders, Taka, why not? Where do we find that they couldn't? But the assumption seems to be that they did not. So therefore, eventually, the Azara would be full of piles of broken shards. So a nest would happen, and they would get swallowed up into the ground so that they don't have that issue. Korach also got swallowed up into the ground. That's true. But here we're talking about in a positive way. Yeah. Anyway, the Omar Abaya, and Abaya says there were other things that also got swallowed up into the ground of the Azara B'derech Nes. Mura v'noitza. You have the Mura and Noitza of an Oila Sa'oif. We know the Torah tells us in Parshas Vayikra that most of the body of an Oila Sa'oif goes on the Mizbeach. The Koyan takes out the Mura, which is the stomach of the bird and the crop and various other parts of the digestive system, along with Noitza, which either means the feathers, or either it means the feathers that are over that area, or it means the waste that's inside the digestive system. Whatever, those don't go on the Mizbeach, as it actually brings on the Pasuk over there, since birds eat from stolen food, Hashem doesn't want those parts on his Mizbeach. So instead, the Koyan takes those and throws them onto the floor near the Mizbeach, and a nest happened that they got swallowed up into the ground. Incidentally, elsewhere, the Gemara points out the Kohenim had to be extremely strong to do that. You know, Maisim B'chol Yoyim, you throw something heavy or something moderately heavy, you can throw it a fair distance, but you throw something light, it doesn't really go very far. And here, sometimes the distance, depending where by the Mizbeach Kohen did the Oilas Oif, he might be as much as over 30 Amos away from that spot where it's supposed to land, and he would throw this Mura V'notza, which was very lightweight, and still it would travel 30 odd Amos, so showing the Kohen had tremendous strength. Anyway, so that's Mura V'notza. The Dishun Mizbeach HaPnimi, also when they cleared out the leftover oil and wicks and ashes from the Mizbeach, from the Mizbeach HaPnimi, the leftover ashes and coals from the and burnt remnants of Torahs, v'hamenorah, and the dishon of the menorah, the leftover oil and wicks, all of those also they would place on the floor, nivloin b'mekoyman, all those would also be swallowed up in the place. Now, Rashi understands that the Trumas HaDeshen was also like that. Now Abaya does not have in this list over here the Trumas HaDeshen, the daily shovel full of ashes that they took off the Mizbeach. And as the Pasuk says, V'somay Eitz Alam Mizbeach, Rashi over here implies that that was also swallowed up into the ground. Tosfos disagrees with that and says the fact that Abaya doesn't have it in his list means not necessarily. And Tosfos also points out on the basis of some other Gemaras, it may be that it's not so. The Gemara elsewhere talks about what happens if a person were to use those ashes, would he be committing Me'ilah? Well, if they get swallowed up into the ground, how could he be using them anyway?
Would he be committing what?
Would he be committing the Aveda of Me'ilah? Me'ilah is using something from the Beis Mikdash for your personal use. Where if a person does it b'shogeg, then he's chayev to repay Hekdash for the value of it plus 25% and to bring a korban. And if he does it b'mezid, then he gets Malkus. But so elsewhere, the Gemara discusses, if a person were to take these ashes that are removed from the Mizbeach and use them for some other purpose, would he be chayev for that Aveda? And as Tosfos says, if they got swallowed up into the ground, then you can't use them anyway. What's the havam in it to think that you'd be able to use them? Okay, Tosfos says, let's say you could say hypothetically somebody digs into the ground over there and finds some. But Tosfos themselves prefers to say that no, the Dishon Mizbeach HaPnimi, the Dishon Mizbeach HaChitzen, rather, the Trumas HaDeshen, was not swallowed up into the floor, only these various things that Rav Shmaya and Abaya listed. Anyway, the point is that was a nest that all these things got swallowed up into the floor. Why aren't we listing that among the 10 nisim in the Beis Hamikdash? And the answer is very well. You could say psuli tlosahavu. You have three psulim that we mentioned before: the omer, the shtei lechem, and the lechem aponim. We originally thought each of them counts as a separate nest. No, chashvinu kachan. Count them instead as one big thing, that all the korbanos that are being brought where there's not going to be an opportunity to bring a replacement, as we discussed yesterday, then there was a nest, they never became possible. So therefore, apit tre, ba'ayot tre. So you take out those two, and now you have two that you can insert instead. So you can put in over there the ones about the ones about the fire and the ashana marocha, and you're back to 10. Well, the question is, Yehochi blue in nami today havu. Well, in that case, then, so if you're going to say rather that like this, we said the last two on the list, the Nochash va'Akrav and the Tzarli Hamokrim, we're not going to count because those were in Yerushalayim. We want to find 10 that were specifically in the Beis Hamikdash. So we're going to ignore those two. We're going to put in the two about the fire and the smoke. That brings us back to 10. Now, though, we're saying if you're going to count all the psulim as one, then you back down to 8. Therefore, you have room for 2. The problem is, then in that case, there's two kinds of blurim. We said the shivrek, the broken pieces of klei cheres are one category, and all the various things that are bio listed, the mura v'noitzer, etc., are another category. So then you have 2. Chashvinu kachad. But on the face of it, shouldn't you count them as one? If you're counting all the psulim, the omer, the shtei lechem, and the lechem aponim as one, you should count this nest that all these various things were swallowed up into the ground, count them as one. Chosru lehu, and now you're missing one. Now you only have 9. The answer is ikanami achriti. There's another nest which we haven't listed yet. Namely, to Amr Rabbi Shurban Levi, Nes Godol Nasa B'Lachem Aponim, a great Nes happened with B'Lachem Aponim, Siluke Kisidurai. When they took it off the Shulchan, it was just as hot and as fresh as when they put it on. Now, they would bake it on Erev Shabbos, they would put it on the Shulchan on Shabbos, and then it would remain on the Shulchan for the entire week, and then they would take it off the following Shabbos and replace it with new Lachem Aponim. So it was 9 days since it had been baked. And we know famously the Ben Ish Mitzri at the end of Parshas Emor made fun of that and claimed it's impossible, but that's how it was. In fact, the Ritva points out based on the continuation of the Gemara over here that it was so hot that it would actually, you'd see steam rising off it. So even after it was sitting on the Lacham, even after it was sitting on the Shulchan for days. So that was a nest. As we find in the Pasuk, we find when David was on the run from Shaul, at one point he comes to Noiv Ir HaKohenim, and he asks Achimelech, do you have any food? And Achimelech tells him, the Kohen Gadol tells him, the only bread we have here is Lechem Aponim. And David says, it's a matter of Pikuach Nefesh, I have to eat it. And the Pasuk mentions over there, Losum Lechem Choyim B'Yom Hilokhoi, to put hot bread on the day that it was taken off. Meaning, in other words, that the Pasuk is implying that when it was taken off the Shulchan, it was just as hot as when it was first put on. So that was a ness. So therefore, that's the 10th ness. But the Gemara asks the Tuleka, You're telling me still there are no other ones? Is that the entire catalog of Nisim that were in the Beis HaMikdash? What about the Amar Rav Levi, Dovah Zeh Masoras B'Yadeinu Me'Avisenu? We have the following fact as a tradition from our ancestors. Makom Aron Einu Min HaMidah. The place of the Aron, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, did not take up space. As we know, the famous idea, Rashi mentions it over here, the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the Mishkan was 10 by 10 Amos, in the Beis HaMikdash it was 20 by 20. And if you would measure from the side of the Aron until that side of the room, you would find on each side, 5 Amos or 10 Amos, you would find a full space of 20 by 20 Amos, even though the Aron itself had a size and a 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5 Amos. So it took up space and didn't take up space at the same time. So that was a Nes, a famous thing that we talk about all over the place in Chassidus, that it's the ultimate example of Nimna HaNimnos, that the Eibishter is not limited by the Eibishter and the Oren, which is the closest thing of, which is the highest thing of a course in this world, does not take up space, it takes up space and doesn't take up space at the same time. Anyway, so that's a Nes also. Furthermore, Rabbanoi says in the name of Shmuel, another Nes that was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Kruvim also stood b'derech nes. Now, we don't mean the Kruvim on the Oren, the ones that were originally on the Oren that Bezalel made. What we mean is the Psukim describe in Melachim that Shlomo HaMelech had built giant Kruvim, much larger than the ones on the Oren. They were 10 Amos tall, and they had rings. Each ring was 5 Amos across. Now, the Pasuk goes on to describe that the Kodesh HaKadoshim there was 20 by 20 Amos, and they placed the Kruvim such that you had one Kruv with its wings outstretched like this, 5 Amos plus another 5 Amos. The next one, the same thing. The total width is 20 Amos, but where is there room for the bodies of the Kruvim? If each wing is 5, and 5 times 4 is 20, then there's no room in 20 Amos for the bodies of the Kruvim, so they had to stand b'derech nes. The truth is, the Gemara in Bava Basra actually says not necessarily. They could have been placed on a diagonal, the Gemara says over there. They could have been, and then you have more room. It could be, for example, that the wings were behind the bodies rather than sticking out from the sides of the bodies. The Gemara does mention a few possibilities over there, but nevertheless, here the Gemara is taking it as a given that none of those terutzim are valid, and in fact, the Kruvim, the bodies of the Kruvim existed b'derech nes. Anyway, why aren't we counting those nisim? The answer is Nisid de Baroi Kachoshiv, Nisid de Gavori Loi Kachoshiv. Because we can say the list of the 10 Nisim is only including things outside in the Azara, things that everybody could see, not things that are inside where nobody can see them. The Kodesh HaKadoshim, nobody can go in there except the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur and the occasional workman, so therefore nobody sees these Nisim. But the Gemara asks, "Well, lachem aponim nami nisigad gavoyu? Isn't the lachem aponim also a nest on the inside? Because again, not everybody goes into the heichal." Now, Marusha says, I mean, the Gemara could have answered very simply. Gavoy means specifically the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Baroi, meaning the outside, would be everything outside of that. Because even though it's true, not many people go into the Heichal, the fact is you have Kohenim going in there every so often to do the Avoida. So the Gemara could have answered that. But instead, the Gemara is going to give a better answer. The answer is lechem aponim nami nisi de baroyu. You should know the lechem aponim is considered a nest that takes place outside, namely that everybody could see it. The Amar Reb Shimon Levi, and we know that based on the following background. The Amar Reb Shimon Lokish. My dichtiv ala shulchan ha-tohar. The pasuk says you have to place the lechem aponim on the shulchan, which is tohar. So what do you have to say? Tohar, tohar, meklal shu tomei. The word tohar implies that it could become tomei. So it's mekabel tuma. The question is, why would it be makabel tuma? Kli eitz ha'osu l'nachasu. Isn't the shulchan a wooden keli that's meant to stay in one place? V'chol kli eitz ha'osu l'nachas ein makabel tuma v'chol tzitz mifnei tuma. Such a keli is not makabel tuma because if it was movable and it's meant to have things on top of it, then it would be makabel tuma. But the shulchan is meant to stay in one place with the load of lachem aponim on it. The fact that it has a metal plating is neither here nor there because the metal plating is bottled to the shulchan, so the metal plating is not going to make it able to be makabel tuma. So such a keli is not makabel tuma, and in fact, v'chotzitz b'fnei tuma. In fact, it blocks tuma from going from one place to another. Hypothetically, if you had something that's tomei underneath the shulchan and there was something else on top of the shulchan, that whatever is on top would not become tomei because the shulchan, being an oyel, would block it from going through. So why does the pasuk have to say hashulchan atoher, implying that it's able to be makabel tuma? So Elam Alamach Magbian Oisai Marin Lachim Aponim Lolurigolim. This teaches us the Kohenim would lift it up on each of the Sholosh Regolim and they would show it to the Olurigolim. And they would tell them, look how precious you are to Hashem, that the lachem aponim is when it's taken off the shulchan is just as fresh as when it's put on. As the pasuk that we quoted before. So the point is, therefore, the lachem aponim can be considered, the fact that it remained hot, can be considered a nest on the outside, and therefore it does belong in the list of 10. How would they show them? So obviously the regular people can't touch lachem upon him. They might make it tame. That brings the ritvah to say the point that they would actually see steam rising off it. And that way they'd see that it's still fresh and hot. One point is, you know, if the yomtiv comes out on Shabbos, then fine, they don't really need that. They can see the kohenim eating lachem upon him after it's been on there for a week, and they can still see that they're still eating it and it's fresh. But most yom tovim don't come out on Shabbos, and you can only take off the lachem aponim and put it on Shabbos. Therefore, they couldn't just pick up the lachem aponim to show them. They'd have to pick up the whole shulchan. But once the shulchan is meant to be picked up with the bread on it, now it becomes more. Where do we learn b'chlal that wooden kalim are able to be makabel tumah? We learn the pasuk mentions them, clay eights. In connection with them, Pasuk mentions a number of other materials, and one of them is sock, a sack. A sack is able to be makabel tumah. I once heard a joke, by the way, that must have been the last word that was said before the languages were scrambled with the Tower of Babel, because you see you have that same identical word in so many different languages. What do we learn from that? In order for a kli eitz to be makabel tumah, it has to be similar to a sack. In the sense that a sack is something you can carry it around empty, or you can fill it with things and carry around. Therefore, kli eitz has to be something that you can carry around with things on it, or not, or put it in one place with things on it, and then it's makabel tumah. So only because they're lifting up the shulchan every so often is it makabel tumah, and therefore the pasuk stresses that point by calling it a shulchan atar.
How heavy was the shulchan?
I don't think it says. It says the dimensions of it. And it says the dimensions of it, and that it was plated with gold. I don't think it says anywhere.
One each one of the four of them, or what?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, we just said before the kohenim were very strong, so maybe four kohenim would be enough to lift it. Maybe they needed more. I don't know. I don't think it says one way or the other. Okay.
What was there?
It was made out of wood. It was made out of atzi shittim, shittim wood, and plated with gold. But then on top of it, you had the lechem aponim. Now, the lechem aponim alone were made of two shnei asurinim yia chala ha'echas. So they're made out of 24 isorin of flour. And isorin is a shiur chala, somewhere between 3 and 5 pounds. So all the lechem aponim, the lechem aponim alone, then the 12 of them weighed something on the order of 50 to 60 pounds. But then you have to add the shulchan itself. Yeah, I don't know how heavy the whole thing was. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara continues and points out there were other nisim in the Beis Hamikdash that we have not yet listed. In particular, Omer of Oshia, B'shar Shabana Shloima Beis Hamikdash, when Shloima first built the Beis Hamikdash, not by kol minim godim shal zahav, he planted over there all kinds of delectable trees made out of gold. So he had there were golden ornaments of trees on the walls as described in the Pesukim, but he had, so there were many different kinds of trees depicted over there. Bohimitzin Perisein Bizmanam. These trees, Bederach Nes, would produce fruit in the appropriate time. Whatever kind of tree was drawn over there would actually produce fruit in the season when such trees, when such regular trees produce fruit. When the wind would blow on these golden trees, no shrim, then the tree, then the fruit would fall off the same way as it does from regular trees. Shenema Yurash Kalavonin Piryo, as the Pasuk mentions in Tillim, the fruit of it will rustle like the Lavonin. Lavonin is a nickname for the Beis Hamikdash because Malbin Avanisem Shal Yisrael whitens and cleans up the Averis of the Jewish people. So we're saying that there were Peris, the Piryo, there were fruits over there that Yurash, they rustle in the wind and they fall off. The Gemara mentions this later on in the Masechta as well, and it mentions the Kohenim would collect those golden fruits and they would sell them and earn a parnasa that way. That way they had an extra source of parnasa, the derech nes. Then when the enemies entered the heichel, yavish, then those trees then those trees dried up. Shenemar, as we find a pasuk, Uferach Levonin Umlo, the flowers of Levonin are miserable. Umlomi basically means weakened or miserable or something. So again, Lavonin referring to the Beis Mikdash. So it means that eventually these blossoms and fruits of Lavonin eventually became umlal, eventually were cut off. In other places in Midrashim, it says to be exact, it wasn't when the enemies entered the Heichal, as in when the Babylonians or the Romans or whatever, but rather it means when, in a different Midrash, it says when Menashe brought Avodah Zarah into the Heichal towards the end of the first Beis Mikdash. Anyway, in the future, Hashem will restore that. Shenemar, as we find another pasuk about the fruit of Lavanin, it'll blossom and it'll be happy. Af gilas v'ranin, it'll be happy and joyful. Kvod alavanin nitanla, the glory of the Lavanin will be given back to them. Meaning, again, Lavanin meaning the Beis Mikdash. So that glory of these golden trees that produced fruit will exist again. La'osid lavan. So we're saying they were gold. That's what we're saying. They were golden forms of trees. They were golden forms of trees, and they produced golden fruit. So the Koyanim, now Marsha points out later in the Masechta, given that they're made out of gold, regular fruits, you can look at them and you know when they're ripe and they're ready to pick. Golden fruits, you can't really know when they're ready. Therefore, they'd have to wait until the wind blew them off the tree, and then only then would they be able to call. Only then do they know like they're ripe and ready to go and sell.
A little hard on the teeth, though, isn't it?
Well, it doesn't mean they ate them. The point is they sold them. They could sell them to people who wanted the gold or who wanted such golden ornaments in their house, and then they could buy actual food with it. The point is that was in... So they were all over the Beis Mikdash, apparently. So in the Beis Mikdash... So inside the Azorah, inside the Heichal, so the Pesukim in Malachim mentioned that all around the walls of the Heichal, there were figures of... in relief on the wood. You had the walls of the Beis Mikdash are built out of stone. Then on top of the stone, you have a layer of wood, because Rashi mentions in a number of places, you can't plate gold directly on stone. It doesn't stick. So therefore, they'd have a layer of wood. On that layer of wood, all over the place, they had in relief, they had sticking out, they had images of kruvim and palm trees and other such things. So here we're talking about those, and the pashtos, I guess, we're talking about other ones in various other places in the Beis Mikdash. We're saying over here, kol minei megadim, so it wasn't just palm trees, it was other kinds of trees as well.
What's it called when it's engraved in? What's the word for that?
Engraved in would be that it's in, what was the word? No, I mean, there's one word for it is incuse, but there's another word for it. One word for it in English is incuse. So there's another word for it also, which I don't know, engraved, I guess you'd say. But here it wasn't engraved, just the opposite, it stuck out.
You said in the show floor, when you go to the Ohel, not to be the ones that are sticking out.
Right, so I don't remember what the words for them are. Boilet is the one, so is the name for ones that are sticking out. The Chokok or Shakua, I guess, or whatever would be the ones that are incised in, yeah, that are sunk in. Anyway, but here they actually stuck out of the walls, but yeah. Anyway, the point is that was a ness. So the Gemara ends up continuing to discuss this point of which nissen exactly belong in the list in Ovis and which one don't. The Gemara ends up saying that the rule is nissim that are like a property of the thing itself. The Gemara calls them nisi dikvi, are not listed. For example, this that we're saying that Oren was Einam and Amida, we're not counting it, not like we said before, because it's a ness inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim and nobody sees it, but because it's a property of the actual Oren itself. That as opposed to the nisim that we're talking about, were things that constantly happen again and again. Whenever there was a pregnant woman around, she never had a problem because of craving the meat of the kodshim and miscarrying because of it. Whenever there was meat left over of the kodshim, it never spoiled, etc. So therefore, those are the kind of nisim we're listing, things that happen over and over again, rather than things where you have a certain object in the Beis Mikdash that has certain properties. So that explains ultimately how we come to have the list in Pirkei Avos that we do, which includes the list that we said before, plus a couple of the ones from the Braisa.
These golden fruits at all were only available for the Kohanim, right?
They were only available for the Kohanim, yeah. So Bepashtos, I guess you could understand they were in the Heichal, where only Kohanim have a right to go anywhere. Okay. Omamau, now we said before, we said the smoke, one of the nisim in the Beis Mikdash then, was that the smoke of the Ma'arocha was never dispersed by the wind. The question is, when we have an Oshan Ma'arocha, was there smoke there in the first place? V'hatanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hey Dvarim Nemru Be'esha Ma'arocha. There are five special things that were said about the fire of the Ma'arocha in the Beis Mikdash. Revutza Ka'ari, number one, it crouched there like a lion. So Rashi explains that actually in Shlomo's times, when the Pesukim mentioned in Divrei Hayomim that a fire came down onto the Mizbeach, what it was is actually a giant coal, a giant piece of charcoal came down from Shemayim, and that was the fire on the Bais Mikdash. And it was in the shape of a lion, so therefore the fire itself was in the shape of a lion. Marsha points out the Bais Mikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech, who comes from Shevet Yehuda. And Shevet Yehuda is compared to a lion, Gur Ari Yehuda. That's why it was in the shape of a lion. Ubora Kachama, the second thing is it was clear like the light of the sun. It wasn't, Marsha points out what it is the fire that we're talking about that was on the Marocha, that was on the Mizbeach, was not the regular kind of fire that we're familiar with, which is a mixture of various kinds of elements. There's an essential yisoid of fire, and that was the fire on the Mizbeach. So that explains a number of the properties of it that the Gemara is saying over here. It was clear like the fire, like the of the sun, because the sun is also the has the essence of yisoid ha'esh. It doesn't have the kind of combination of elements that make up fire that we're familiar with. The Yeshba Mamish, there was a substance to it, meaning not only the coal obviously had a substance, but the flame had an actual substance. You could actually feel, you could actually touch it, in other words, and it had, like we have by the darkness in Mitzrayim, where it says it had a substance, it had a mamoshus to it. So here, the flame had a mamoshus to it. Again, with this idea being that it was this essential element of fire. But if Telus Lachen Kivation, it would consume moist things as easily as dry ones, which means, for example, so you have among the, you know, you have, for example, that you have limbs of the korbanos that are put on it, which are full of blood and juice and whatever, and they would burn as easily as dry things. It also means if the wood itself wasn't completely dry, then it would still burn just as easily. It means, for example, the Gemara discusses in a few places, you could have a person could decide that he wants to give as a nedava, he wants to give as a korban wine all by itself. Now, wine from the nesachim that came with various korbanos was poured into the little bowls that you had on top of the mizbeach. Wine that a person brought as a separate korban of its own was actually sprinkled on the fire. And the Gemara deals with the question, wouldn't that be putting out the fire? And the answer is that it's fine because it's only a temporary thing and it's being done l'shem in order that it'll burn more. But he was saying the fire from the first Bais Mikdash, you wouldn't even have that kind of thing. It would consume the liquid wine just as easily as it would solids. The Enamala Oshan, and the fifth one is it wouldn't produce smoke. So what smoke are we talking about before that there was a nest that the wind wouldn't disperse it? The answer is Kikamun and Bidehed. Yes, but what we're talking about is there was also fire on the Bais Mikdash that was brought from Hedya. The Kohenim themselves had a mitzvah to light a fire over there. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says "Venosnu bnei Aaron a Kohen Eish," that the Kohenim should put fire on the Mizbeach, that means afapi she'esh yodedis min haShemayim, even though fire was coming down from Shemayim, mitzvah lahavi min haHedya. There's still a mitzvah to put Hedya, to put regular fire over there. As like you have, there's a Sirusa del Eila from Hashem, but we have to reciprocate with the Sirusa del Asata. So therefore, so that fire has the regular properties of fire, and a regular fire produces smoke. So that's what we're saying, though there was a nest with that smoke that the wind never dispersed in. So if you want to ask Revutza Kari, you're telling me that the fire on the Mizbeach was crouched there looking like a lion. He says, I saw that it was sitting there on top of the Mizbeach, and it looked like a crouching dog. The answer is, like Hasha, Hav Mikdashishin, Hav Mikdashini. In the first Bais Mikdash, it looked like a lion. In the second Bais Mikdash, it looked like a dog. Which the idea being, Marashah says, after all, who sponsored the building of the second Bais Mikdash? Kodesh, the king of Persia. And the Persians have a certain comparison to dogs. We actually find in a pasuk in Nehemiah, where Nehemiah is speaking to the king of Persia in his time, and the Gemara says, "Vashegal yeshevas etzloi." He had a shegal sitting next to him, where the Gemara explains that means his pet dog. So there's a certain association between them and dogs. In fact, also the Abarbanel points out another thing. Kodesh is actually so called because that's the Persian word for a dog. And there's a story about him that he was abandoned as an infant and raised and nursed by a dog. Similar, like you have other legends like that about other famous historical figures. So there was just a story about him that he was raised by a dog, and therefore they gave him the name Kodesh. So therefore there's a certain connection between the Persians and dogs. The Zohar also talks about that the lion in the first Beis HaMikdash represents a much higher level of Kedusha, and in the second Beis HaMikdash, because they had so much lower of a level, than therefore, yeah.
And curtains are also connected to bear.
They're also connected to the bear. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara asks, "Will Mikdash Sheni mi Havi? You're telling me B'chlal there was a fire min Hashemayim in the second Beis HaMikdash?" What does it mean? The pasuk, the Navi Chagai says to the people at the beginning of the second Mishnah, "Alu ha'hor v'avesim etz uvnu abayis." Go up to the mountain, bring wood, so we can build the Mishnah. The Eretz Aboy, and Hashem says, I will desire the Mishnah. The Ekovda, and I will be honored in it. Amar Hashem. And v'korin ve'ekovda. Now we have a kriyuksiv over there. It's written without the hay, so it's as if it said ve'ekovein, but we read it ve'ekovda. So what is it? So the hey, maishner, the mechusar hey. Why is it missing a letter hey? Elo hey dvarim sheyesh b'mikdash rishon, mikdash sheni. Because there was five things that were different between the first and the second mikdash. The elo hein, oren kaporis of kruvim. Those all count as one. The oren together with the kaporis and together with the kruvim was hidden away at the end of the first mikdash, as we'll talk about in more detail later in the mesechta. Eish, the fire on the Mizbeach, Ushchina, they didn't have the Shchina, people didn't have Nevuah. The last Nevuah was in the second year of Daryavish, which is the year that they started building the Mishmikdash. There is actually a Pasuk in Zechariah that mentions one Nevuah of his in the fourth year of Daryavish. So one possibility is that was a one-time thing. They needed a special question from Hashem, so therefore one last time Hashem gave Zechariah Nevuah. But other than that, no. V'ruach HaKodesh, and the Ruach HaKodesh that made the Ruach HaKodesh Urim V'Tumim. So the Urim V'Tumim didn't work in the second Beis HaMikdash. So there's a machlokas about that, by the way. Tosfos discusses, is the Urim V'Tumim the name of Hashem that was inside the Choshen, and then we're saying they didn't have that at all, or did they have to have it because it's part of the actual Choshen, but it didn't work. It didn't cause the letters of the Choshen to light up. Whatever the case, the point is we're saying there was no Eish min Hashemayim in the second Beis HaMikdash. The answer is Amri. The answer, Ein, Mehava Havu. There was a fire, Siyur, who delay Messiah, but unlike in the first Beis HaMikdash, where it actually helped to burn up the Korbanos, in the second Beis HaMikdash, it did not. The only fire that was actually burning the Korbanos was the Eish min Ahediyat, and the fire min Hashemayim was just there to show that this is the Beis HaMikdash and it's the place of the Shechina, but it didn't actually help to consume the Korbanos, and therefore we can say it's as if it didn't exist. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Chaf Gimel Cheshven. In Tanya, it talks about that all the Giluyim that will be La'asid Lava all depend on Ma'asenu V'Avodasenu that we do during the time of Golos. So now, in general, we have our Avoda brings the Gola. You also have the concept of Midah Keneged Midah. So what avoida is it that we do that brings about Tchias HaMesim? First of all, in general, when you do a mitzvah, you're taking the gashmias to the world, which is associated with death, because every gashmiasic thing eventually dies and decays, and you're making it something kedusha of kedusha, where kedusha is eternal. So that brings the Tchias HaMesim. And number two, the whole concept of avodas habirurim is you have sparks of Kedusha that fell from the original level, and you're restoring them to where they belong. Now, the Zohar has an expression, man denofel mi darge ikri mis. When somebody falls from their high level, then they can be called dead. So in that sense, these sparks of Kedusha are in a certain sense dead, having fallen from their level, and when we restore them to where they belong in Kedusha, then we're doing Tchias HaMesim with them. Okay, finishing up with the halachas of traveling on a ship on Shabbos. So we talked about that you have the din that if you go into the ship on Erev Shabbos and wait there until dark, then you're allowed to go, then you're allowed to board the ship on Shabbos. So the Alter Rebbe actually says, really in principle, that should be osur, but the minhag has become to be makel on that kind of thing. In particular, though, he mentions that if you're going on the ship, for example, in order to daven with a minion or some other mitzvah like that, and it's also going and there are goyim on board the ship as well, then there's more of a heter for it. Either way, though, if the ship is traveling exclusively for Jews, then there's no heter at all, because then all the malacha that they're doing is for Jews, and that's no good. Come on, I'm not sure how much I'm going to talk about this.